show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Finally, we got some news, some moving, some shaking, as they always do. The winter meetings really put things into a capsule and just shake it up, and things start happening. Lots more news since the last time we recorded. But first, I, of course, am your host, Jeff Hurren. With me, he's only a little verklempt right now, but he's Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this fantastic evening?
It's been kind of a crazy week. The winter meetings are always fun to follow because it's just chaos. So far, just through the first 2 days, it seems more than normal. So that's pretty fun.
And if you're not following Michael Engel on Twitter, folks, you need to do it. Hot stove time is the time that you shine, Mike. It's my favorite time of the year as a follower of yours on Twitter. Your mystery team engage tweet had me laughing at my desk today at work when I happened to see that. That was just too funny. So kudos to you, sir, on a job well done.
Thank you very much.
But first, before we get into some of the probably – from a grander baseball sense, some of the bigger baseball news for the day, we're going to talk about some news that's not huge necessarily in the world of baseball, but pretty good news for the Royals. They've made their first two major signings, I guess major for the Royals, I suppose. First two major signings of the offseason. Number one, and this wasn't necessarily I guess it is the order that they signed him, but number one is the Royals have Chris Young back on a 2-year, $10 million contract. I think the total possible value with incentives, and there's a third year option that can be bought out for $1.5 million. So technically, I think it's guaranteed to be $11.5 million. Awesome deal, because Chris Young gave them huge innings last year when they really, really needed it. When Vargas went down and you had Ventura and Duffy struggling, and, you know, Volquez was pretty consistent for the most part, but he had a few dips where he wasn't going. But I mean, there was a time when Chris Young was your MVP of that team in the early going, and he kept that rotation afloat early on in the season. So, you know, I don't know if it was how much the Royals think he can continue that forward, and how much of it was just like, hey, you really helped us out last year, so we're just going to reward you with a couple of years. But I think this really, with what Chris Young gives you between starting and being a long man out of the bullpen, I think it really gives you a lot of good options for the Royals to do what they did last year, which is start him out in the I think they've said they're going to start him out in the rotation, but you start him in the rotation, and then if one of your young guys, Kyle Zimmer, Miguel Almonte, somebody steps up, looks like they're ready to go, you can shift Chris Young to the bullpen. You can make him your long guy, and then or your spot starter if somebody were to go down with an injury, somebody needs to skip a start, whatever. You know, Yordan Ventura always seems to have some sort of thing that keeps him out of a few starts per year. So plug and play with Chris Young right there. It gives the Royals a lot of options. Mike, what are your thoughts on the deal?
He seemed like somebody that the Royals were going to be pretty happy to re-sign. The deal itself is just so good. I mean, you're paying $12 million for a major league guy for two seasons. You know, he's not going to give a ton of innings, but if you get 150 innings out of him in each year, I mean, that's pretty solid. He's in the right situation. I don't recall who reported it, but there was something about he had a three-year deal somewhere, but wanted to come back to Kansas City. You know, he's had success here. It's the perfect fit for him. You know, you've got that defense, you've got that park.
Yep.
I mean, it was the first time I saw a transaction on Facebook under the official Royals account that was universally praised. There was literally nobody disliked it. I was like, I don't know if that's a good sign, but it's clear it seems to make sense. And like you said, he's got the flexibility. He can start. He adds depth. If it turns out that he struggles kind of like he did, probably two-thirds into the season in 2015, well, then, yeah, you can maybe swap him out and spot start some guys, give him a chance to rebuild. But a guy like Chris Young was instrumental. He was huge in the World Series. I mean, game one, oh, yeah. Extras, huge. Game four,
three innings,
exactly what they needed. I mean, they're completely indebted to him. He was a huge part in their winning the World Series. And, you know, to bring him back for another full season, I think that I think it's a good move. And, the money's great for it. So you're getting a major league starter. You probably get 25 starts out of a guy for, you know, for some million dollars this year. That's solid.
Yeah, and if he can give you, you know, close to what he gave you last year, you're in real good shape. And I think that is the plan for him, to where starts the season in the rotation, and they're hoping somebody takes that spot from him. I haven't heard a ton about Jason Vargas's recovery and what the plan is for that, but I don't believe they plan on him being available next year at all. But the idea of, you know, a Kyle Zimmer and Miguel Almonte, I think those are the two big ones that they're really hoping somebody takes that big leap forward and just kind of comes up and takes that spot. And, I think that's a great plan. You got you, cause you don't want Chris Young doing a full 32, 33 start season just because of his propensity to wear down. But if he can give you, like you said, 25 really valuable starts doing what he did last year, and then somebody else takes over, and he's just kind of there for that spot start when you need him, and then plays a role like he did in the playoffs. I mean, there's a conversation to be had about, I mean, Chris Young, you could have made an argument about him being most valuable player in that World Series. I mean, he came up huge when they needed him the most, and it was impressive. So, I personally love the signing. Think it was great. The money's good. Seems to be a great fit for Chris Young. And, you know, it's so great because with everything the Royals have done and everything, you know, winning the World Series and all this stuff. And we talked about it with Hochaver, where, you know, before, when everything was going really bad and the Royals were losing, it was kind of just like, what is this guy? They need to, you know, figure out what he is and decide if they want to, what they want to do with him. And so it was so great to see him have all that success in the World Series. And Chris Young, even though he was only with the Royals for last year and, you know, in the next couple of years going forward, but it just kind of gave me that really, you know, outside of whether or not the money makes sense and outside of whether or not, you know, he's going to be decent over the next 2 years or not, just made me feel good, because everything that Chris Young went through, losing his father near the end of last year and coming up so huge in the World Series and the playoffs and what he did early in the season to help keep that rotation together and everything. And then to see him get rewarded with, you know, a nice solid deal and some good money, like, just made me feel good. You know, sometimes it's okay to just throw that stuff aside and just feel good about something, you know, Mike? It just sometimes it's okay.
It is. And it's a guy who didn't even get a major league offer last year until the Royals reached out to him in spring training. So, you know, to earn it, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So that was kind of first news that started trickling down. I think it was last night we first kind of heard about that, that they were, or was it this morning?
It was officially announced yesterday. I think it was like, you know, over the weekend, it was pretty much
assumed. There was, it started trickling out that, oh, Chris, you know, Rose and Chris Young were really close to a deal. And then, kind of became official. I said yesterday, this is December, December 8th when we're recording this. So whenever you're listening, that's your frame of reference for what we're talking about yesterday or over the weekend. But since it is December 8th today, Mike, let me tell you about how my morning started. Okay.
Okay.
So usually when I wake up, you know, you do the thing, the alarm, I'm a big snooze button guy. I know some people, they hit that alarm, they jump out of bed. I hate those people. I'm horrible. I do the snooze alarm 5 to 6 times on a typical day. So I set my alarm way ahead of time, knowing that I'm going to snooze it out for a while. my wife usually gets up a little bit earlier, but anyway, so when I look at my phone, all it shows me is the alarm, and then I hit the snooze button. Go back to sleep for a little bit, get up, do my thing, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to work and, you know, if I'm at a stoplight or something, then I'll peep the phone and see what notifications I might've missed that might've been important over the night or something. And lo and behold, there's one from 12:30 AM in the morning. The Royals had signed Joaquin Soria for a 3-year, $25 million deal. And I just talked about that good feeling with Chris Young. And then I got it again, and maybe even more so with Joaquin Soria. Like, he's back. I mean, loved him when he was here. We kept having the discussions. You know, that was one of the, in the early days of the show, that was kind of one of the topics. Like, before he had his second Tommy John, it was, you know, should we trade him? Should we try and get some value for him? And then, you know, afterwards, the topic became, well, should the Royals trade Greg Holland so they don't find themselves in the same mistake as Joaquin Soria? But even though he did end up still having Tommy John like Soria did, it wasn't, the argument was always, you don't need to close around a bad team, but, you know, Holland was a closer on a good team, so it was okay. But still, like, to see, you know, Soria, and again, it's one of those things, you develop these kind of connections as a fan to these players. And so he was a Rule 5 guy. He came out of nowhere. He was really good. I mean, there was the executioner stuff. And I use that term with a lot of hesitation because he himself said that he doesn't like to have that called. So I'm not calling him that. I'm just saying that was part of his, you know, when he really caught fire. And you know, we're not going to refer to him that going forward on the show. But yeah, just to see him develop into one of the premier closers in the league and then unfortunately have that injury like he did. He had, you know, the Royals had to make the tough decision and the right decision, frankly. We talked about it on the show. They had to cut him, and that was the right move. And then he battled his way back. He's been in the playoffs the last 2 years with two different teams, and the Royals went out and they brought him back. You know, the prodigal son has returned, if you will. And it's really great because so many players, and I heard on the radio this morning on 810, Nate Buchady kind of made a similar comment, but so many players, you see, the legitimately good players from the really bad Royals era, you know, so basically the last 10 years before 2014, you know, I mean, your Mike Sweeney's of the world and your Joaquin Soria's and, you know, even up to your Zach Greinke's and maybe your Gilmesh's, you know, those, you know, just all those players that really were legitimate good players and didn't get to be on a good team. You're like, oh man, I wish they could be on this Royals team. Well, that's one of them. You know, now Soria, he's on this good Royals team, and hopefully they're going to continue their success and go back to the playoffs again next year. And Soria is going to be a big part of that. And quite frankly, Ryan Madsen is gone. He signed with the Athletics, went the way of Billy Butler. But for, I mean, if you're going, excuse me, if you're going into to battle next year with Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, Joaquin Soria, Luke Hochaver, and then possibly Danny Duffy coming out of the bullpen. I mean, good Lord. It could be, oddly enough, the second year in a row that the bullpen actually gets better, statistically speaking, which is insane to think about. But
right.
So that's my morning, Mike. How was your morning? Tell me about when you first heard the news.
Well, that night I was watching, I was just like reading a book. I was kind of like, I'm kind of done, you know, on the internet tonight. I'm just going to, you know, so much stuff happened. I'm like, I'm going to take a break. So I read a little bit and ended up found some episodes of Parks and Rec on syndication. So I was like, okay, cool, I'll watch this. And then I watched a second one and stayed up a little later than I meant to. And as I was walking back to the bathroom to brush my teeth and all that, I looked down at the phone and I just checked Twitter to see, okay, what's happening? And somebody's referring to the impact of this sign. And I'm like, wait, and go and check. And sure enough, they signed Joaquin Soria. And I mean, it was the same kind of thing. It was like, I was happy for that. I thought that was so cool because, you know, for so many years, Soria was one of those guys that was like, man, it would be nice to have him around when it all works out. Because, you know, he pitched in some rough years. He pitched 2007, 2008 and all that. You know, some of those years where the Royals just were not that good. And, you know, so just to bring him back is like, okay, that's cool. It's like there's a nostalgia factor to it, but he's also a really good relief pitcher. You know, he's not quite the dominant guy that he was when he was a closer with the Royals, but he's still really good. And
if Joaquin Soria is your seventh inning guy,
yeah,
you're in damn good shape.
Yeah. And, you know, the Royals right now, as it turns out, they, you know, even if Duffy doesn't go to the bullpen, you know, that's still a great bullpen. Man. You know, that's still those the back four guys. I mean, you're right in the same spot. It's like you said, it might be a better bullpen. You know, just looking at those four, because you're not going to have, you know, Holland back, and he's not going to have that struggle that he had last year through pretty much most of the season. And, you know, it's even if you're looking at Hochaver, Davis, Herrera, and Holland last year compared to this year, because a lot of people are really like, oh, I don't know about that money. Well, I mean, it's really like a $3 million difference between the two groups now and then. And if Holland would have been around, he'd have been making $11 million. It's pretty much it's pretty much the same amount of money.
It's a zero sum better, right there, more or less.
Yeah, for a better team. So it's just like, you know, big deal. You know, why worry about it? I mean, there's an element of it. You know, I understand, yeah, you don't want to block yourself from anything else. But the Royals, for the most part, they don't have a lot of holes to fill. I mean, they need to get left field and right field settled. It'd be nice if they could have gotten somebody for second base. Maybe they'll get another starter. But they really don't have to. You know, they could go and sign one outfielder and probably take the season and have a pretty okay lineup. You know, ideally they're going to get Gordon, but, you know, if they don't, they have other options, and we'll talk about those in a bit. But there's not a lot that they need to fill. These guys are still mostly arbitration guys, or they're in contracts that are pretty friendly still at this point. I mean, there's nobody who's making you know, $10 million on this team in 2016. So it's not like you're saddled by anything, you know, by signing Soria for $8 million, you know, if that's what his 2016 salary is. It's not that big of a deal. You know, it's just not that big of a deal. And so, you know, when you're improving your bullpen, you know, you're filling the same hole that, you know, Madsen left. You're getting some goodwill. I mean, it's Joaquin Soria. That's awesome. It's like, that's just cool. So there's not a lot to dislike about this deal, really.
And he's good.
Yeah. It's like, not
he's worth that $8 million. I tweeted out this morning, he over the last two seasons he's pitched. I can't remember the exact stats now. I have to pull it up again. But 100, I think it was like 114 innings over the last two seasons, of 2.5-ish ERA and a 1.05 WHIP. I mean, and a 141 ERA plus. Like, that's a really good reliever. Yeah. And that's what they're getting. And to your point of whether or not the money fits, like, if you're not paying for that spot, if you're not paying Joaquin Soria $8 million, then, again, like you said, if Greg Holland was around, he'd be getting more than that. But then if you're not going to pay Soria $8 million, you know, the odds of you finding another Madsen are really slim. So you're probably going to be paying $5 or $6 million for another guy who's not as good as Soria. So that extra $2 to $3 million is not preventing you from doing anything.
Yeah, your next option would have been, I don't know, who's the guy who, Mark Lowe, the guy who signed with Detroit. You know, that's not that great of a guy. I think Chad Qualls signed somewhere, you know, whatever. It's just there's not a lot of quality, like, back-of-the-bullpen type arms that are available in free agency who don't expect to also close. And Soria doesn't feel like he needs to close. Clearly, you know, he's going to have a seventh inning role and he's going to be pretty dang good at it. I mean, that's going to be fine. You know, I mean, we can breathe. We can breathe easy and enjoy it. I think it's okay. And so, you know, we'll see Soria again. And Michael Marriott had 48 last year on his jersey and he ended up getting designated for assignment and signed with Philadelphia, and so 48's available for Joaquin Soria again. So
there it is.
It's perfect. So hopefully people kept their jerseys.
Yes, indeed. The only possible comparison I can make in that type of a scenario is I mentioned last week when I talked about the jersey curse. Did we talk about that on the show, or was that just between us? Okay, it was Donnie Edwards for the Chiefs, he left, went to San Diego, and he came back. Same deal. That's what it feels like. So totally awesome. Really happy, excited about both those deals. And not just from a, you know, emotional standpoint, but, you know, they're both good moves for the team. They're great fits for the Royals. And they both fit in really well with the culture because they've both been here before, and they both know, or the Royals know what they're going to get with both of them, or at least they think they know, and they have a predetermined spot for them. And that's been part of what the Royals have done, that's been part of what's made them really successful. And what Ned Yost, I think, has gotten a lot of credit for is having defined roles for players that they know what they are to be in terms of what their role is for this team, and they prepare that way and they stick to it. You know, obviously things can change, and if you're Chris Young, you might get shuffled around a little bit, but I think they told him last year that they were planning on using him that way, so he was prepared for it, and that's been part of what's making them successful. So these guys are going to have defined roles on this team, and they're going to be put into a position to be successful. Joaquin Soria can be a very successful seventh inning guy. Chris Young can be a very successful part-time starter, part-time long-term long man out of the bullpen. So two good signings. I like both of them. Sounds like you're on board with me on that, Mike. So with that, we will take a break here. And then when we come back on the other side, we'll talk about some other big signings that happened today in the world of baseball that may have a direct and indirect effect on the Royals. So stick with us, and we'll talk about how the Royals are going to operate on this free agency moving forward.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
I'm in Kansas City, and I heard this sound one more time that I hadn't heard only twice in my life. Now, you know who this is? Bo Jackson swinging at that, and now I heard this sound. It was a thrill for me. I said, here it is again.
The Vault.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
Going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. the waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limitatosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport. And thank you for sticking with us through that break. And as we mentioned before we got on that break, we have some other big signings to discuss, not by the Royals, but in baseball in general. Folks, I mentioned at the top of the show that, Mike, you were just a little verklempt, and quite frankly, so am I. And it's because, as of today, again, we're recording on December 8th. Sad to say that the news, I don't know that it's been officially reported yet, but it's all one of those all but done things. Ben Zobrist is going to be on the Chicago Cubs next year. He's not going to be a Royal. We thought it was a long shot, but we also thought the Royals winning a World Series was a long shot, and that happened too. So there's anything is possible in this world, and we thought maybe the Royals somehow, by the grace of God, would be able to retain both Alex Gordon and Ben Zobrist, but we know that now not to be fact. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, there was a certain point, I don't know, it was maybe a week or two ago, where I really I wanted to get Zobrist back. It's like we've said before, he really fits this team, can play anywhere, but it just seemed like there were so many other teams that wanted to go after him. A lot of teams were willing to go with the fourth year, and his contract ends up being 4 years and $56 million. So that's a lot for, I mean, it's still pretty fair market value for a really good player, but he's also 34 years old. He'll be 38 when the contract is up. Something the Royals were pretty clear they probably weren't going to want to do. So I hoped they might be able to bring him back. I couldn't expect it. And I think last week, like we talked about, it seemed like their plan, if they were going to get Zobrist, it was probably going to be only after they'd also been able to re-sign Alex Gordon. Gordon is kind of just waiting for the outfield market to clear up. And who knows when that's going to start. I mean, you still got Hayward and Cespedes and Upton, and, you know, those guys are, you know, considered ahead of him and still haven't really had any kind of news on any of those guys. So with Gordon, you're still kind of waiting. So with Zobrist, you know, seemed like he was going to be going somewhere else, which it's hard to begrudge him. You know, he gets to go to Chicago. He's from Illinois, and Joe Maddon was his manager in Tampa Bay. So, you know, I think that's pretty much about as ideal as you can get for Ben Zobrist. All things considered, and he gets to play second base full time, which is something that he reportedly was holding as a priority. So, you know, works out perfectly for him. Sucks to see him leave, but, you know, in the grand scheme, he was here for 3 months, even though it felt like he fit in great. You know, it's just how it goes.
Yeah, I think all things considered, if you take the money out of the scenario, I think Ben Zobrist's number one choice would have been Kansas City. I honestly think that. But you can't take money out of the scenario.
Right.
And there is a business aspect to baseball. And the business aspect was Ben Zobrist was going to take, you know, I would believe that the Mets gave him a better offer and he just didn't want to go to New York, which I feel like it's kind of interesting. You know, when we were growing up, Mike, I feel like that was everyone's goal. You wanted to go to New York, or you wanted, you know, whether it was Yankees, Mets, or you wanted to go to the big markets. But now maybe it's the fact that everything feels so much more connected with the internet and with better, you know, TV and all that kind of stuff, that maybe that's not as much of a focus anymore. And there, I don't know, maybe salaries are enough that every team, some team somewhere that's not on, you know, a gigantic market can make the, even though I guess Chicago is probably the third biggest market, but
yeah.
Regardless, you know, it's not the, Chicago's not New York.
Yeah, it's not New York with the kind of attention that New York brings, and it's not LA with the, I guess, glitz that LA brings. It's Chicago. It's, you know, it's probably the third biggest market, but it's Chicago, you know, just like it's not the same. It's, yeah, there's I'm not articulating it well at all, but it's not the same thing. It's totally different environment.
Yeah. Chicago is a city that's almost the size of New York, but feels like Kansas City and how people are, you know, at least. So, but that's beside the point. Ultimately, what I'm trying to get at is, I feel like Ben Zobrist chose to go to Chicago because he felt like it was a better fit for him, both as a city, maybe as an organization. Like you said earlier, he had the familiarity with Joe Maddon. So, you know, there's that aspect of it. And I think all those polls in those particular areas were stronger, I think, for the Royals, but I don't think the money was there. I think the Royals might have been able to go the $14 million, but I think in terms of average annual value, but it might have been 3 years. It might have been 3 for $42 million. Or maybe they could even go up to $15 million and it would have been 3 for $45 million, but they weren't willing to go that fourth year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give the Royals front office one thing. If they're anything, they are consistent. They only give that fourth year for special cases. They really have kind of a hard line on those final years of contracts. And I mean, I would bet my mortgage payment right now that that's what's holding up this Gordon deal from getting done. I honestly think right now, just from the slight whispers and kind of you can put the puzzle pieces together, I think the Royals from an average annual value standpoint are where Gordon wants to be, but he wants an extra year. And I think the Royals are trying to fight it, trying to figure out if they can kind of sandwich some sort of option thing together. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, you get that feeling too, or think there's more to it?
I can't decide if they're a year off or 2 years off, because I feel like they're probably solid at 4 years, $18 million a year. But I think Gordon would probably prefer a sixth year. I think the Royals could go a fifth year. It is Gordon. So, I mean, that's a pretty special case, given his history with the team, given, you know, that he's younger than Zobrist, so maybe they can commit a little bit more to him. But at the same time, it's like if some other team is willing to give him 5 or 6, you know, that's going to be tough to fight against. So I was kind of thinking the same thing. Like, how could they fit that? Could they offer him 4 years guaranteed, set up 2 option years with pretty good, you know, buyouts in the event that they don't go for it? You know, does that bridge it a little better? I don't know. So it's kind of a tough market to figure out. He's also among Upton, Hayward, and Cespedes. He's the oldest of those four. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, the other guys are either in their prime or still, you know, maybe working towards it in the case of like Hayward, or Upton even.
Jason Hayward just shows, man, when if you come up and you are, you know, you come up really early. I mean, he's 26. He's going to sign a $120 million contract at least, and he'll be just at the very end of his prime, and he'll be able to sign another 3-year contract probably for some big money still.
Yeah,
at the very least. I mean, just nuts. It's Whereas this is probably Gordon's only real chance to cash in.
Yeah, and I think if he was 30 years old instead of 32, it might be different. It might be something where, yeah, I can take 4 years, hit the market again at 34, and get another 3 or 4 year deal. But now, you know, who knows? So that's kind of the difficulty with Gordon and how he fits. You know, and then I don't know if that means that Hayward's got to be the first domino to fall, or if Gordon, being kind of, you know, the oldest guy and probably the smallest deal of those four, does he need to be the first guy? I don't know. And it's been kind of a weird off season and a weird winter meeting period already. So it's like, I don't know how to read it. But I think like you said earlier, the Royals probably are about the same spot money wise, but it's just those years. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily that they don't think that he can do it for 6 years. I think they just want to be able to protect themselves in case in 4 years, he's not, you know, close to the same guy that he is today, or that, you know, he has to change positions. The defense isn't there. And maybe the offense doesn't pick up to compensate, you know, and that's that, you know, I mean, legit concerns. He's 32, or he'll be 32 in the opening day next year. So I get it. I get why it's not like a slam dunk, and I get why there's a lot of skepticism about if the Royals will even have a shot at him. But God, I mean, you gotta do it, right? I mean, the fan in me says, just screw it. Just be irresponsible. Bring him back. Get 2 years with this core group, you know, win two more divisions, go to the playoffs two more times, and then just see what happens in 2018 and 2019 and deal with it at that point. You know, that's what I want to say. And I think even though that's very much like a fanboy kind of thing, I think there's some logic to it too. You know, and we'll talk a bit about, you know, some of the other options to replace him, and they're not really any, you know, they're not really that great. And you're still paying a decent amount of money for guys who aren't that great, or you can pay for a guy that you know is going to be really good, who already knows your clubhouse, you already know how he's going to fit, you know how he interacts with the rest of your players. He's a perfect fit for Kansas City. You know, he has been since he was drafted. So, I mean, there's no reason other than that commitment to sign Gordon. Like, that's the only thing that's got to keep him from it is that they just can't go that length of contract, and that's it. And if that's what it turns out to be, that sucks. I get it, but it sucks.
Yeah, you know, and for the longest time, the mantra was trust the process, right? And then it was a punchline. We joked about it on this show. You know, trust the process was a punchline, and now it's a slogan. it's a badge of honor. I want it on a shirt, but the, you know, trust the process, because, you know, we didn't really trust the process because we didn't really have a choice, but Dayton Moore rewarded the trust that the ownership showed in the process by winning a World Series. So there, you know, and if anything, we kind of talked about this throughout the season, that we've seen what winning does to an organization, and it gives you a confidence to not second guess yourself. Sometimes you need to second guess yourself. So, you know, it's not necessarily always a good thing. You don't want to be overconfident to where you never question any decisions, but at the same time, they're in a position where they can say, okay, we have a way of doing things. We have a way of doing business. And I mean, you look at the Rays, and the, you know, the Rays have, you know, they've suffered a little bit the last, you know, year or two in the wins department, but, you know, and part of it, their, you know, general manager left, and so they're kind of going through a transition period. But for that period from 08 to 2014, roughly, they had a really good run there, and they had a specific way that they did business and that they handled their players and things, and, you know, it worked for them, and they stuck by that, and they were consistent, and that's the way that Dayton Moore is. So the question is, how far, or I should say, let me rephrase. The question becomes, where is that hard line? Where is that hard line between we are going to stick to the process And if Alex Gordon doesn't fit within what our process is and what we want it to be, where we can go, then we're going to have to let him leave. Or we are going to make an exception for Alex Gordon. You know, where does that hard line end? I don't know. But I want you to give me right now, Mike, straight up, is Alex Gordon coming back to the Kansas City Royals next year?
Ugh. I have to, like, don't waffle on
this.
Answer.
Don't waffle on this. Give me an answer. I'll give one as well, but give me an answer.
Well, I have to say no on the principle that if you're betting one versus 29 teams, you got to go with the 29 just on likelihood.
Right. Always take the field. Always
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I got to say that, but I think if there's going to be two offers
but
that are
even, it's not quite the same.
Yeah. If there so, are, I mean, if like he gets, I don't know, if he gets 6 years and $100 million offer from San Francisco and he gets 5 years and 89 offered by Kansas City, maybe he takes Kansas City's. I think if there's any similarity or closeness, the tie is going to go to Kansas City. But I think there are also teams that have more money to throw at him. And if it gets to a point where he can't refuse it, well, you know, there it is. And I think there are other teams that are in position that are willing to do that and willing to, you know, go a fifth, sixth year. And, you know, I think if that's what it comes down to, then, yeah, the Royals won't get him back. So I guess I would say no, although I'm optimistic slash hopeful that I'm dead wrong. So that's where I'm at.
I think it's a no. As much as it pains me to say, I think the Royals are going to give a run. I think they're at that. I think Gordon settles in at around $18 million. And we've kind of talked about this. My initial inclination after the season was over was that the negotiation for Alex Gordon starts at 5 years for $90 million. I think he'll end up somewhere close, but I think a team is going to push to that $100 million mark. And yeah, if it was $90 million versus $80 million, maybe Gordon would take the $10 million hit for the hometown discount, but going from nine figures to eight figures, like, I think there's a mental aspect to that where it's like, man, even though it's only $10 million difference, can I really turn down $100 million? So I think somebody's going to go there, and I think the Royals are going to say, we wish you the best. We just can't make it work. So, you know, and you know, I think it'll come out in the press what the Royals offered and that they did everything they could, because they know it's in their best interest to look like they made the best effort possible. But,
right,
you know, there's a lot of reasonable – the Royals fan base, you know, despite what you may see on your random Facebook posts on occasion, the Royals fan base, as far as most baseball fan bases go, is rather intelligent. So if it comes out that the Royals offered Gordon 4 years or 5 years at $18 million per and he got 5 years at $20 million per – I don't think many people are going to be upset about that. They gave a go at it, and it's a really expensive price tag. And the last year, maybe the last 2 years, he probably won't be worth it, as much as it pains me to say again. But
yeah,
I think Gordon's gone. So that kind of that'll kind of segue us into our next point. Where do the options go? Or what are the options for where the Royals go after? I mean, Zobrist's already gone. Mm-hmm. And then if Alex Gordon is gone, where do we go from here? So there's some options here. Nothing that jumps out at you as, oh my God, yes. You know, we've already, if the Royals can't make it happen with Alex Gordon, then the guys you mentioned, Jason Hayward, Yoenis Cespedes, BJ, is it BJ Upton or just,
Justin Upton.
Yeah. Okay. Upton, those three off the table. Because they're going to be more than Alex Gordon. Because like you said, they're younger, and the talent level is comparable. The one I think of those that would have the best bet to sign would be Justin Upton, just because he seems to have a lot of really big struggles that kind of deflate his value. Because at times he looks lost, and then at times he looks like he's a world beater. So, right. Which that's kind of how Alex Gordon can be at times too. Because
it's true.
There's some months he hits below 200, and there's some months he hits like August 2014, where he carries an entire franchise on his back for a month. So, you know, it's not an unusual phenomenon, but those four are off the table. So I think the next two names that really kind of jump out or not, which I wouldn't say jump out, but the next two names that most people point to as viable options that the Royals can afford that would fit into it to where the Royals play or to how to the Royals style and everything are Gerardo Parra and Denard Spahn. So if you can get past your underwhelming sense of excitement for those two names,
right.
Mike,
yeah,
give me your thoughts if to try and let's try and look at it realistically. Tell me what you think. If and then, you know, are there better options?
I mean, of those two, I'd prefer Parra. He finished last year pretty weakly, but I think he's, you know, he's going to be a good defender. He's got, he's not completely powerless. I don't know. I mean, I don't like either of those. I just want to sign Gordon. Parra's younger. That's definitely to his benefit. I think ultimately he's probably the guy they would get if they don't sign Gordon. They've been kind of linked to him previously and earlier.
Was it this year's trade deadline they were linked to him?
I think there was maybe something, but
just nothing serious, but just like, hey, the Royals are kicking your favorite phrase,
kicking the tires. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, he's probably the most likely guy, but I don't know. I mean, I'd rather if they don't go for they're not going to get Cespedes. Someone reported, I think it was Joel Sherman reported that they inquired about him, but I think that's just for show. Cause he's going to be more than Gordon. If they can't afford Gordon, stands to reason they can't afford Cespedes. But like Dexter Fowler is kind of one of those guys floating out there that
they've been linked to him before as well.
Yeah. They, you know, when he was traded, even 2 years ago, there was some hint that maybe, I think, I don't remember who it was. I think it was like Tim Collins and Aaron Crow were linked as the potential return to Colorado. And I was like, yeah,
it was an offseason trade too, wasn't it?
Remember.
Was it a trade deadline?
I'd have to remember.
Maybe it was the trade deadline and then later that offseason. I can't remember that.
Maybe, because he's popped up in a bunch of these things. But Fowler's 30. That's, you know, that's fine. He's a good defender. He's got some power. Can get on base. I mean, he's a good outfielder. He's a good player. And I think that he should be your plan B, but he could be another guy who he might be looking for like 6 years. And, you know, again, you know, if the Royals, yeah, they'll probably like to have him for the next 3 years, but those last 3 years, who knows? So that's kind of troublesome. Austin Jackson's out there, but he's kind of just disappeared. Doesn't, you know, he's never been a guy who can make a lot of contact. Don't think he's a huge, he's not that appealing of an option. I don't know. I mean, there's just not a ton of guys out there. It's, I guess Alex Rios is back out there. They want to throw another,
he is a free agent,
throw another $11 million at him. You know,
what's Nori Aoki doing? Someone kicked the tires on good old Nori Aoki over there.
Yeah. I don't remember what he got from the Mariners, but
yeah, he's locked up. I was just joking around, but
I mean, he's kind of probably in that range of like, okay, he's, you know, pretty good, but this is what he made.
Yeah,
I guess, Alejandro Diaz is out there, but he had like 2 good months with the White Sox and hasn't really been very good. So
I think, as a side note, I think you had Diaz for those 2 months on your fantasy back when we had the Bowman report. I tried to trade you for
it. I did.
Because that was like my one – steals was like my one area where I suffered, and he just like stole a bunch that month. I'm like,
Mike, base every day for like 2 months and just
– let's make a deal.
Yeah. And no, I can't trade him right now.
And then he cooled off, and then I get an email from good old Mike, like, you still interested in Diaz?
Right, yeah.
And I think I'm okay.
That's like people trying to trade for Greg Holland. Hey, Greg Holland.
Exactly. Phil. Hey, how do you like that Greg Holland guy?
Yeah, it's cheap. I don't know. I don't know. The Royals probably, I don't know. I don't know who fits. I like Fowler if they don't get Gordon. I think he'd be reasonable. They've also kind of said that Gerard Dyson might get a shot to start, which I think he'd be exposed quickly as a pretty poor hitter. So I don't know if that's really that valuable, but, you know, it's at least an option. And then there was something from Jeffrey Flanagan who mentioned that Chester Cuthbert might be playing some outfield this winter to see how he looks, because he's pretty much blocked by Moustakas, but surely looked like he belonged last year. So maybe that's, you know, you put him in left, he's maybe athletic enough to do it as a very cheap option, since he'll be making the league minimum. So I guess those are some options, but it's just, there's not a lot appealing past, you know, Gordon, Cespedes, Upton, Hayward, Fowler. I mean, those are like the guys. Everybody else is just kind of eh to me.
Yeah, and you know, I'm inclined to agree for the most part, but I think the approach that you take here, in terms of how we kind of went through this exercise last season, talking about replacing the loss of a James Shields. So if you look at what Alex Gordon gave you, and then what Alex Rios gave you, and before we go through this, let's back up for a second and say the Royals obviously won the World Series with Ben Zobrist as a position player. However, let's not forget that the Royals were the best team in the American League, arguably in baseball, for 3 months without Ben Zobrist. So they had one of the best records in baseball with, and we're just talking left field, right field, and second base, because pretty much every other position is set. So Alex Gordon, and then you had Alex Rios off and on, but actually for those first 4 months, the majority of that was the Paolo Orlando, the great Paolo Orlando, Gerard Dyson platoon of 2015. And then Ben Zobrist, or not Ben Zobrist, sorry, Omar Infante at second base, right? So those are the three people you had, and you were still one of the best teams in baseball. The question is, can you, to try and, because we don't know what would have happened if they didn't get Ben Zobrist. We're glad they did, because they won the World Series, and that's the end of that. But going forward, you think, well, you know, we had no reason to believe that they couldn't continue at the pace that they were going. But so assuming that they could have kept that going and still would have come out roughly the same, then can you get three players that can basically, in summation, give you, from a value standpoint, what Gordon, Rios, and Infante gave you? And you can kind of take Infante out of the equation, because as of today, he's the starter. So
right,
you're not really going to gain or lose much there. You hope you gain, and he goes back to like 2013, 2012 Omar Infante.
Just be, but that's not almost average Infante.
Yes.
That's acceptable, I guess.
But if you look at it, you say, okay, Denard Spahn last year had a 114 OPS plus. He hit 5 home runs, 22 RBIs, pretty weak, but he only played in 61 games. He was injured. In 2014, played a full season, still only had 5 home runs, 37 RBIs, but had a 113 OPS. I mean, he had hit 302, 355, 416 for a slash line. That's pretty good, you know, for the Washington Nationals. And then over the last 2 years combined, he had a total WAR of 4.5. You know, 3.7 of that came in 2014, and 0.8 came last year. But again, injuries, so forth. So
yeah,
you know, there's that. But if you can get somewhere in between, so you get that two plus WAR player, then you might feel okay. Gerardo Parra, similar type of guy. Last year, he had a 1.0 WAR, which isn't very good, but He had a 2.1 war with Milwaukee and then a negative war with Baltimore. So had some struggles after he got traded to Baltimore midseason. And, you know, maybe you can kind of recapture that, whatever he had with Milwaukee. You get a full season of two war player, you know. But he also, you know, in 2013, he had a 6 war season. So that potential is still there. He's probably not going to be that guy, but it's there. And then, and as a third option, Mike, the guy you mentioned, Dexter Fowler, he's probably your best option, at least most consistent. So in 2015, he had a 2.2 war and then a 1.8 war the year before. So, you know, he's kind of fallen in that two war range again. So if you can get 4 total war wins above replacement from your 2 corner outfielders, you know, then how much? I'm gonna pull up Alex. I can't remember his exact war number here. Let's pull it up.
Oh, Rios?
Mm-hmm. No.
Or Gordon.
Gordon was 2.8 last year. In so, 100 again, games. He was injured.
Yeah.
But 104 games, 422 plate appearances, 6.6 the year before for Gordon, 4.2 in 2013. So some really good years there. But last year, which they won the World Series last year, so that's what we'll talk about. So he had the 2.8. And then Alex Rios, let's look him up really quick. He's going to be – I got too many tabs open on my little browser here. But he's his is going to be pretty low. But again, he was injured for whatever that's worth. He was negative. He was negative 1.1. So combined, the corner outfield spots gave you 2 war, roughly. So that's what you got from an entire season, and you were still able to win the World Series. And you're coming back with a better bullpen, theoretically.
Right.
And, you know, you're hoping that there's some other improvements that you can make just internally. You know, maybe Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer take another step forward. You know, if Lorenzo Cain can continue, he's probably tapped out as far as his ceiling is concerned, but if he can just give you what he gave you the last 2 years, you're good to go. You know, Alcides Escobar probably not going to give you a ton more. So, you know, you're hoping maybe Moose and Hosmer can give you a little bit more in the power department. Moose probably right where you think he'd be, but Hosmer can stand to grow a little bit. And then you hope that, you know, Ventura, maybe Duffy take that step forward that we were all hoping they took last year that they kind of sputtered out on. So maybe between a step forward from Ventura and then just solid 2.0 type win above replacement level play from, if you're able to get both Denard Spahn and Gerardo Parra or Dexter Fowler, you know, maybe it can kind of all equal out. Doesn't always work out, you know, that way, that, you know, mm-hmm. just because you have the equivalent war, you get the same wins. But, mm-hmm. you know, as a thought exercise, you can kind of convince yourself that, you know, maybe you can make that work. And from a money standpoint, if the Royals are willing to give the $18 million to Alex Gordon, which I think they are, but then it's the year argument. Mm-hmm. Well, if you can give, you know, nobody between Parra, Fowler, and Spahn made more than $9.5 million last year, and Parra made $6 million. So if you can get, say, you know, Denard Spahn for $10 million a year and Dexter Fowler for $10 million, or maybe you get one of those two at $10 million a year, and then you get Parra at $8 million a year or something, then you're right where you would have been with Gordon, but now you got 2 spots filled.
Yeah.
And then maybe if you were going to fill Gordon and Gordon, if you were going to give Gordon his salary, and then you were going to go for one of those guys anyway to fill the right field spot, then maybe you go a little bit further and you say, okay, well, let's see if we can stretch this and maybe go out and get a Scott Kazmir or something and try and improve the rotation a little bit. These are all just thoughts.
Yeah, that's possible. There's also, you know, Paulo Orlando is a guy in that mix. I don't think they consider him like a starter, but, you know, last year he did put up, I checked it just a second ago, he put up 1 win above replacement in part-time duty. That's not awful. I don't know if he'd reach like 2 in a full season, but he'd be fairly close to that. So I don't think that's too bad. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe, you know, maybe a Fowler Para combo might work out to something that equates pretty nicely to what, you know, your non-Lorenzo Cain outfielders put up last year. You know, and that would keep a lot of defensive ability out there too, which, you know, the Royals want to keep a look at that. That's why those are the guys they're looking at, you know. These are all guys who can play center field and have played center field but can play the other positions. So, you know, pretty much if you signed any two of those three and already had Orlando, Cain, and Dyson around, well, yeah, you'd pretty much have an entire outfield of center fielders. So that's not too bad. In Kauffman Stadium, no less. So I think those guys are fits. It's just they're not that interesting. They're not Alex Gordon. And it's just like, you know, it's like if I don't know the best comparison. It's like if you think, oh cool, we're gonna go shoe shopping and awesome, you want these cool Air Jordans, but you get these okay Spalding's. It's like, okay, well fine, you'll get used to the Spalding's. It'll be Spalding's. All right.
I feel like only you would bring up Spalding's in a Jordan's discussion.
I'm a child of the 80s, so
old school guy. I've never owned a pair of Spalding shoes.
I don't remember what the heck.
I guess maybe I had some baseball cleats that were, but never tennis shoes.
I don't know. But it's just like, okay, fine, these will work, but they're just not, they're not as cool. It's just like,
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I'm sure I'd be fine and get used to it, but it's just like, it's Alex Gordon. You know, I'd be willingly irresponsible for them to just sign him you know, like I said before, it's not my money. And no, that's not a good argument. It's not. But at the same time, it's Alex Gordon. You know, it's a franchise guy. This is a statue in the stadium kind of player. If you have a chance to keep him for another 5 years, you might as well give it a shot. You know, I think he's still going to be fine. I don't think, you know, the we got to keep guys together thing. I don't think they're going to re-sign Eric Hosmer. I don't think they're going to get him on a long-term deal. Maybe they do with Moustakas, but is he going to be, you know, is he going to be the same guy last year? He's banking on one good year, and then Lorenzo Cain is going to be 30 soon. He's older than Billy Butler, we'll remind you.
Mm-hmm.
Probably this is his peak, you know, and I like him. He's awesome.
Yeah.
But can you count on him? You know, because in 3 years, he's going to be 32, and it's going to be in the same kind of spot where you're talking about Gordon now, where it's like, I don't want to commit a fifth year to this guy. So how much would
they especially with how much abuse Cain puts on his body the way he plays.
Yeah. And so many different injuries that, you know, they've been better the last 2 years, but they're still a thing. And so, you know, I don't know that Cain's that attractive of a long-term extension. I mean, maybe they probably offer him something to buy out, you know, 1 year of free agency and then have an option. So maybe you're looking at like some kind of 4 year deal going into this next season. But then you're running in the same spot, and then Kane's going to be 32, almost 33, and people are going to want to extend him too. So it's like, I just don't think that Kane's like a long-term guy in the same sense that you might for like that mega contract, like the 10-year extension, Joey Votto style kind of thing. Like the Royals aren't going to do that. And so, you know, when that comes back to Gordon, it's like, well, if you feel like he's going to be good for two more years in left field, then why not, you know, ride out the rest of this run with this core group and then see what happens in 2018. And maybe at that point he's, you know, aged to the point where he needs to move to third or first base, you know, and replace Eric Hosmer. You know, I think that's reasonable, and I think it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and another thing is, in 2 years, what's the market going to look like? What are player salaries going to be then? By that point, you know, is $18 million for Alex Gordon as a 34-year-old going to look that crazy? Probably not. I mean, you look at some of the crazy, you know, we talked about weird big contracts last time. you know, somebody made $20 million. It looks downright reasonable now. So, you know, I think they got to do what they got to do to sign Gordon. I know that the fan in me is saying that, but it makes sense to me as well on a logical, you know, logical point of view too. So it's not just because Alex Gordon is awesome, but I don't want to believe it's, you know, I think there's a good reason to keep him. So they should do that. They should listen to me and keep him.
Yeah. And I think you're right that they should. And maybe it's the overly pessimistic sports fan in me that says they, and I've changed my tune from last week, even just because last week I said, you know, I think they're going to cave. I think they're going to imagine him in another uniform and they're going to say, okay, I don't want to look at it. Just change the 4 to 5 years and just sign the deal and we'll deal with it later. You know, that was kind of my feeling, but I don't know.
It changes.
Maybe I'm just trying to prepare myself for the seemingly inevitable future of an Alex Gordon-less Royals organization. And I brought the comment, and there was some whispers yesterday about Alex Gordon going to the Cardinals would be chief competition or something. And I said, man, that'd be like back in the 90s when Neil Smith went to the Broncos, just that kind of your homegrown guy going to a rival that everyone hates, just soul crushing type of a thing. So that seems to be kind of, there hasn't been much more fire behind that smoke, but you know, and I said, I think I'd mentioned in an email to you and Lesky and Troy, or just that if I'm Alex Gordon's agent, I'm leaking as much info as I possibly can about the Cardinals being interested. Cause if there's one way to make the Royals cave on a fifth year or an extra couple million, it's Alex Gordon in a St. Louis Cardinals uniform, especially when they come to Kauffman next year. Cause they will. I mean, that would be nuts. So I don't know. It's a sad thought.
If the Cardinals got him, I would just be so upset. It's just like, yeah. How do you root against Gordon? You can't.
No, it's impossible. I'd have to cheer him on. It'd be the first Cardinal I'd ever cheer. So obviously I wouldn't cheer him. I would just give the typical, you know, former player standing ovation type thing when he came back. I wouldn't be like, yay, good hit against us. You know?
Right.
Once he steps into the box, it's all over. But when they announce his name, you know, I'd probably clap. I'm not ashamed. I'm not embarrassed, Mike. I would do it. That's me. That's me, though.
He'd be a Cardinal, though.
I don't know, man. But regardless, it just feels like I think the Royals are going to hold fast to their process, their way of doing things. Now, if Gordon goes, then I really hope that they can't just let Gordon go and then say, well, that's it for the offseason. See you guys in March and hope that they can fill the spot. They got to make some moves. They've got to make a concerted effort to fill that gap like they did last year. You lose James Shields, you go pick up Edinson Volquez. You know, they made a concerted effort to try and fill the gap that he left, and they did. So
yeah,
maybe lightning can strike twice, and maybe they truly, I don't know. I heard on the way home, Jeff Passan was on 610. I'm listening. And Passan said, or is Danny Parkins, and he says, people are talking about Jerod Dyson being a starter, you know, and you kind of mentioned some of the internal options the Royals have, but I was incredibly surprised to hear Jeff Passan say that he was actually curious to see what Jerod Dyson could do as a starter. Because to me, that conversation is a non-starter because Jerod Dyson is a non. I don't see it. I feel like he's gotten, I don't know what the longest extended period of time he's been a starter is. I'd have to look that up. But just what I've seen and what his numbers bear out, he's just, at best offensively, he's going to be a average major league player. Two below average at best, probably. And he's very, very good defensively. But is he good enough to make up for the deficiencies that he has on offense? And if you're putting him in right field, even if he is that good, you know, how much value does right field as a position have? Alcides Escobar is a below average hitter, statistically speaking, at least he was last year. And but he plays gold glove caliber defense at a premium position. He can make up for it from a value standpoint. Can Gerard Dyson do that? You know? And I think Paolo Orlando gives you a little bit more offensively than Dyson does, but can he give you what Dyson does defensively? You know, he's a pretty good defender, and he was a late inning replacement a lot in the playoffs, but which is kind of funny, by the way, when you watch the there was some mashup people did that I saw before the World Series of kind of all the playoff games. How many final outs Paolo Orlando caught? Just kind of funny when you see them all just that quickly, and it's like every game it's like Orlando against the wall, Orlando under it, Orlando. Yeah. You know, it's like, man, he caught every single last out of the Royals, but that's beside the point. So I don't know. That's my thought about those. And I mean, do you? I don't know. Gerard Dyson? I don't know.
I like Dyson. I like him.
I think he's a valuable piece.
He's very valuable, but there's a point. It's kind of a diminishing returns. It's like, how much value do you get out of him if you give him 500 plate appearances versus 300? And I think over the extra 200, he would be exposed as a pretty weak hitter to the point that maybe you're not gaining that much. There's also the element of, as a late inning guy and a pinch runner, you know, if he's pinch running for somebody, he doesn't have to do the work of getting on base. He doesn't have to do that. If Kendrys Morales gets on base or Sal Perez gets on base, you know, he didn't have to do that. His on-base percentage for his career is .320. Not bad, you know, just not good. And it's mostly empty. It's pretty much, you know, singles and triples is about what it is. Doesn't even have a lot of doubles, you know, which kind of tells you how he drives the ball. So I just don't see that he's going to be able to get on base enough to use his speed. The big benefit of him being a bench guy is you can guarantee that if you get a guy on first base, you have the option to put Gerard Dyson in and probably get at least one extra base out of it. Whereas if he's in the lineup and has to hit four times, he might go 0-for-4 and you don't get that. And that's kind of a difficult thing for me to work with. I don't think it's as simple as just extrapolating that, well, he was a 2.2 WAR player. He'll probably be 4.5 if he plays full time. I don't think it works that way. I think he would level out because the bat would be so poor. His defense would have to be that much greater. You know, some of the impact that his speed gives you wouldn't be there. You know, I mean, he played in 90 games, stole 26 bases. You know, that's just kind of, he's situational. It's just how he is. And I think that's where his value is best. I think that he doesn't hit righties great. You know, he doesn't have power. He's a liability against lefties. It's just, he's just not somebody who I would say he needs to play and get 600 plate appearances, because it just doesn't seem like he's going to do anything with them. You know, he had two extra base hits against left-handed pitching last year. And not that he had a lot of extra base hits, but, you know, only two. So 42 out of his 50 hits came against righties. So he's not going to hit lefties. And shouldn't face lefties, and so that's a weakness. I just don't see it as a starter. Not saying like trade him off, dump him, whatever. I think he's got a role, but I think that's fourth outfielder and not a starter. So the biggest benefit is that he's not a guy you have to go out and sign for $10 million a year who you're not thrilled about. That's about the biggest draw for me about Gerard Dyson as a starter someplace. And, you know, if you're talking about right field is typically an offensive production kind of area. You know, Rios was not great defensively, but he was okay in the playoffs. They felt like he was going to be okay, you know, out there just for the regular season. Aoki, not great defensively, but got on base at least, and had occasional doubles power. So guys like that, yeah, you can kind of get around with them. and they're capable of playing full time, but Jarrad Dyson just never really has seemed like a full time guy to me. And I don't think now, when he's in his 30s, that's any better. So I just can't, I can't see it. So I think it's smoke. I think it's throwing up the idea that the Royals are prepared to have other options, and not much more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I think you probably hit it right on the head there with that last comment, that they want people to know they have a plan in place, that they can move forward. And sometimes these types of things are thrown out there for sort of potential leverage of negotiations with other players. So, you know, you might hear like, oh, you know, Royals really think that Jarrad Dyson can flourish in a full season as right fielder. You know, you might start to hear those kind of things, and, you know, don't believe it. It's just noise so that the agent of Denard Spahn or whoever it is gets a little nervous and says, well, you know, maybe they're prepared to move on. You know, maybe we want to take this offer, even though it's not exactly, it's not what we're trying to get for, you know, whatever. So
it smacks of Carlos Peguero is the next Jose Bautista.
Yes.
It's like, oh, cool. It's real easy to make those claims in the off season when guys aren't doing anything on the field. And it's just like, I just don't see it working out for Jarrad Dyson. I think he can be just as productive of a player, but he's got to stay in the same role. And that's just how it's going to, and I think that's ultimately how it's going to work out. I think they're more likely to get, you know, a couple of guys and just fill them in and keep Orlando and or Dyson in that kind of bench role. And I think that makes sense. I think that's, I would rather do that and sign boring guys than to try to give them a shot.
Yeah, Jarrad Dyson has way more value coming off the bench, like you said. So your ideal scenario is, yeah, you sign a boring guy, Gerardo Parra, and then, you know, Parra plays the majority of the game, gets out in the, or gets out, gets on base in the eighth inning, maybe the seventh inning, I don't know, and then you put Dyson in there, and he maybe steals a base, maybe you get him to score a run. He's not a liability in the outfield. He's probably an upgrade over any of the people that we've mentioned, defensively speaking. And then, you know, worst case scenario, he's got one at bat that you have to worry about. And when it comes to one at bat, you know, he's, I mean, he's got a ability to hit, to hit, you know, he's got a hit tool. He's just not very, it's just not very good.
Right.
So, you know, as opposed to, you know, someone who just can't hit. You know, he's not Terrence.
It's not Gore. Terrence Gore or Herb Willingham or a pitcher.
Yeah, or a Drew Butera, you know, or something. So
yeah, he can. He's hit okay, you know, but he's
He could hit a whole season. You know, I would bet he'd probably knock out at like 235 over a full season.
Yeah,
you know, and so he he's not inept. I mean,
he does have the ability to walk.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically when you're hitting, you know, 230, your on base is only going to be about 310. And it's just like, he's a guy who has so much value tied into being on base and getting on base and stealing bases. It's just, that's how he's got to be. And, I don't know. I mean, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't either. So we're in a holding pattern. We got Alex Gordon. We're waiting on that. And we don't know, like you mentioned kind of when we started this discussion, since he's probably the lesser of the four, if for no other reason than based on the fact that he's the oldest of the four major outfielders that are out there left, that you have to wonder if he has to fall first, or, you know, does he set the floor of the market, or does someone like Jason Hayward set the ceiling and then everybody falls in place after that. So in the pitcher's market, it typically goes from the top down. So you had, unless you're Zach Greinke, but you had David Price, who signed a historic contract. And then a couple of days later, Greinke signed an even more historic one. And then things have kind of started to fall in from there. And I think soon, which, by the way, where the hell is Johnny Cueto going to go? My word, no one has, you haven't heard a thing about him.
I don't know. I mean, he had that first offer from Arizona of all teams, and he turned that down.
At this point, when you see what David Price got and what Greinke got and how good Cueto's been relative to those two, which is putting him within a few slots, in terms of like a leaderboard, and he's younger than them. I mean, that's an insulting offer from the Diamondbacks, really.
Yeah, and that's what it works at, where $20 million a year is insulting to a guy.
Who's been one of the top five pitchers in baseball for the last 5 years.
That's where it's at now. And so, I don't know who's going to get him. I think the Giants might give him a shot. They were kind of in on Greinke for a while. So, that could be an option. They did sign Jeff Samardzija for like $90 million. So maybe they're out of money. So I don't know. I don't know where Cueto's going to end up, but I don't think he's in no hurry to sign.
He'll get his money.
Yeah. And they made the point on MLB Network earlier this evening that, guys like Scherzer signed in January. So it's not like the winter meetings are up, and if you're not signed, well, you don't play. It's like, well, there's going to be plenty of time for him to come to some kind of a deal with whoever it ends up being. And I think he's going to get his money. He'll probably get $25 million a year and, probably continue to be Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, the good Johnny Cueto.
Right.
The World Series and ALDS Johnny Cueto. Until that market kind of bears itself out, I don't know if Gordon's going to be the first or the last or, what's going to happen there. So the outfield market is kind of perplexing, and maybe with Ben Zobrist kind of being one of the first position players to really sign, there's a possibility that maybe that kind of set the market a little bit. So maybe now things will start to kind of fall into place. Maybe he was the first major domino to fall, and next thing Gordon's getting $18 million and Upton gets 20 and blah blah blah. Who knows? But we're just kind of have to wait and see here.
Yep. We'll see what happens, and if something big happens, we might check back in later in the week. If nothing happens, maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. I would guess by early next week we'd have an answer on Gordon. I don't know if we'll get one this week.
I hope it's sooner than later, though, just to get it done.
Exactly. Ugh. I want to move forward, because if everything hinges on Alex Gordon, I feel like, because if you get Alex Gordon, I think you can fill in the rest and you can feel pretty good about the Royals still being one of the favorites in the American League. Because with Zobrist going to Chicago and, Price went to Boston, but they're in the East. Nobody in the Central has really made a huge move yet. So
there was the Tigers and Zimmerman, but that's...
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Crap, that's
but
right.
They've but they've still got...
I mean, they're in such bad shape. Yeah. They've still got a trash bullpen. They've still got, Justin Verlander, who knows what he is. They don't have David Price like they did coming into last year, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zimmerman's, he's going to do well. But then you got to wonder, Victor Martinez, Miguel Cabrera, a year older, they both started to show some age. What's going to happen there? So, the Tigers, even with the Zimmerman signing, don't scare me a ton. I mean, they finished last place last year. Kind of weird to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like once they were out, they were out.
they checked out big time. Fired your GM, traded off your star, your best pitcher. Just
it was like, peace. We're done.
We'll see you next season.
Yeah, it's like the scene from Half Baked. They're just like, yeah, fine, we're out of here.
I'm out. But so, I think the Royals are still in good, even without Gordon. I still think they're probably the best team in the Central. I think they're in really good shape. So, it feels worse because we were so attached to Gordon and Zobrist, but if we lose them, there's still the Royals are still in a good position. But if they sign Gordon back, then it's
we're going for it. Let's make this happen again.
Yep.
Let's get two in a row World Series championships, but they got to get Gordon first.
It's true. It's true. Or they could just stay on nostalgia and sign David DeJesus and Mark Tian and call it good.
You know?
They could play for outfield.
Door number three, if you will.
Right. Don't advise that. I don't
advise. They already dipped into the rubber with Abania as well, so I don't know. They've got Soria back. They've met their quota for former Royals players returning for the year before it even starts. So I think we can leave it there.
I like this.
But so with that, I think we'll leave you on this show. A lot of stuff starting to get excited in the hot stove season. follow Michael Engel for debunking hot stove rumor mill myths and sniffing out fake Twitter accounts like some Twitterian sleuth of Sherlock Holmesian perspective or levels.
It's so easy anymore. I think the jig is up for most of the
things. Ken Rosenthal spelled with a zero instead of an O. You clever girl.
Yeah, there was one the other day. They weren't even trying. It was like they didn't change the act. Like, I don't know what was going on. It was ridiculous. People. Yeah.
So, but follow Michael on Twitter. He's at Michael Engel. You can follow me. I'm at the Jeff Report. You can follow our sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn. Let's see, what is their
Twitter handle? Is Kelly's Bar KC.
I always forget if it's Kelly's Inn or Kelly's Bar. It's Kelly's Bar KC.
They're on Instagram too, Kelly's Westport Inn.
Yes, pretty easy. Yep.
And they have a thing on here that they're doing like an Irish time New Year. So you can ring in the New Year at 6 p.m. on New Year's Eve.
There you go.
So, you know, if that's something
out, go home, get some sleep.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's like the mid-30s way to do it now, I think. New Year sucks anyways. New Year sucks, and you know they're still up for grabs if you need to do a last minute holiday party. 10 people, 200 people, whatever. They've got the rooftop, they've got the main floor, so just send them a message at info@Kelly's Westport Inn and they'll take care of you. They have drink specials and food and pizza and stuff, you know. Can't go wrong.
If you've listened to the show, you've probably been there when we've had a similar type event. We've had a live show. Kelly always takes great care of us. Make sure you go. They've been so great in supporting us and allowing us to do this show and bring it to you guys. So if you ever want to have a beer or whatever, you know, go and hit up Kelly's. First of all, it's just an awesome place. It's been one of my favorite bars even before they sponsored the show, before I ever did the show. It's an institution in Kansas City. And it always helps. Tell them the Kansas City Base. I
Royal Men Report.
It's called a report, but tell them Kansas City Baseball Vault sent you, and it'll be great. So again, we'll leave you there. Thank you all so much for listening. If we don't ever say it enough, we can't ever say it enough. Thank you. You guys are the reason we keep doing the show. Love hearing from all you guys on Twitter. Seeing, you know, comments on the show, on any topics we discuss, or, you know, me spouting off about my nerdery on Twitter or whatever. Love it all. Thank you guys so much for listening. For Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Furr, this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Royals.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates.